as we see in this very quote, that the states are the laboratories of democracy, and then my state, Arizona, is clearly the meth lab of democracy.
The meth lab of democracy. Wow, that's how you want your representative describing the state she represents. And she won. Hi there. Welcome into this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Dongleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. Hoping that you had a great weekend and that you're all cranked up, geared up, ready, prepared, packed, and ready to move for President's Day. Yeah, I know. It's just, even when we were kids, it was George Washington's birthday back then. They just lumped them all together for government efficiency's sake, I guess. But happy President's Day anyway. Hi there. Good to have you along today. Thank you so much for being there. I'm glad you're along for the ride. It is, as I said, the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, and I hope you're looking forward to a great day today. I'm going to be out and about, busy guy today, doing some things beyond the studio. I've got that happening a couple times this week, maybe more. We'll see how that works out. And let's see, the weekend was, for us, uneventful, I would say, for the most part. It was an uneventful weekend. Nobody got hurt. Nothing really weird happened. So there's not much to tell, except for, I don't know about you, but Friday being Valentine's Day, my wife and I went out to grab a bite to eat. I mentioned this on Friday that we probably would, but we did not go and get fajitas as I assumed we would. That's what I get for making assumptions. You just never know. My sweet wife, Jane, came home and I asked, so what do you want to do? She said, well, we could go get some Japanese tonight. Doing. It threw me for a loop. I'm like, you, huh? Everything was weird. So we went to get Japanese and she said, maybe, if we leave a little early, we can get there before the Valentine crush. And I said, okay. Well, so we did. We walked into the little Japanese place in the town nearby, and because there's nothing where we live. I mean, seriously, there's nothing. There used to be in Village Springs, Alabama, where we live, there used to be a barbecue place. It was a stand. It was a trailer, a little trailer that had been opened up across the highway from us, on the property of another business, and they eventually closed down and went away. I finally, after seeing them there for a couple of years, finally decided to take a chance on them and had barbecue there one time, and I was positively impressed. I was happy. I was going to go back, and then the next thing I know, they're gone. So we don't even have that going for us here. No, we have to go like 20, 30 miles away in order to find a place to buy something to eat. Well, not quite that far. We can travel a bit less and get burgers, and there's a Mexican place and a really, really bad Chinese place, and we don't go there. So we go the other direction, and we hit the little Japanese place, and we literally walk in, and we get a table just like that. Woohoo! Yay! And we notice as we're chatting and eating and passing time that the place is filling up, and when we finish our meal and we leave, there is a line out the door of people waiting for a table. And I had noticed they have a bench that's very close to the booth where we were seated, where people can sit and wait to have a table ready. And we noticed that it had been turning over. I was watching over Jane's shoulder. I'm watching this. Well, that's a different group. That's a different couple. And there's a two or three. There's a family now. And it had been turning over, and it had turned over two or three times. And when we got up, I saw why. Because there were lots of people stacked up waiting to get our table. So we cleared room. Anyway, but that was our Friday night. And then we came home and we didn't do much of anything. We watched some TV and that was about it. I've got a couple of movies waiting for us to watch. We didn't even watch those. So it was an uneventful weekend for us. Not much going on. There was a birthday party for a 2-year-old. No, I didn't go. And then there was, no, it's just, I'm sorry. The reason to go to the birthday party for the two-year-old is for the cake and ice cream. And I'm really, honestly, I'm just being brutally honest here. It's for the cake and ice cream. Okay? That's why. Then you hang out with the other adults. And when I say adults, I mean grandparent age. We're standing around going, yeah, well, how about that? And what about, did you ever get that tire fixed on your truck? And after a while, the conversation runs out and you're sitting there on your phone, and kids are screaming and you can only get so much cake and ice cream before you start getting funny looks from people. So I had things to do anyway. So I'm, you know, stuff around the house because I was doing some, you know, I was vacuuming. I was taking care. We had all these cardboard boxes that have been piling up. I was breaking those down and eliminating those. And I just had things to do, stuff to do. I was folding my socks. Anyway, so much for the weekend for us. Folding my socks is a full-time job. It's a Monday edition of the podcast. Hopefully you're doing well and you're ready to dive into this President's Day. Did you see, it started popping up over the weekend that Michael Bloomberg, Little Mike, Mini Mike, has decided, apparently, well, there's talk. There's talk that Mini Mike is going to tap Hillary Clinton for his VP pick. Now, I have to say that this is, honestly, above all things, premature. I mean, how far along are we in this process? I know November is not that far away, but Bloomberg hasn't really been seriously in this race for long at all. He's throwing millions and millions and millions of dollars of his own money to buy his way in. And when you do a little digging, you find out how dirty that actually is, because it's not just the ads. And I know you're probably like me. You're sick of every time you turn on the television. The cable systems across America have been, they put out the welcome mat for the Bloomberg campaign. Yes, send your cash here. We'll play your ads. And they're playing his ads every time you turn on the TV. There they are. And the same applies to social media. You see them popping up in social media. You go to YouTube. They're on YouTube all over. It's almost impossible to watch a YouTube video today without a Michael Bloomberg ad running either before it or popping up sometime during it. And so he's throwing millions and millions of dollars at advertising, but it's not really turning out well for him. And the reason for that is that the socialists who are running on the Democrat ticket are not happy with his money. They don't like the man because he has money and he stands against everything they stand for. He's a billionaire. And there are those who have said the billionaires shouldn't even exist. There should be no billionaires. People who are running for president have said that, which I find very interesting, because I think if we actually did our due diligence and did some serious digging, we would probably find out that there are billionaires in their donor list. But I digress. So it's early yet. And the talk of a vice presidential choice is a bit premature. But to make an announcement or to let leak gossip that a certain high-profile former senator, former secretary of state could be his vice presidential pick, well, that's wow. How about that? What do you think? Yeah, there was talk that Bloomberg might pick, may pick, could pick, will pick Hillary Rodham Clinton as his vice president. Now, that's interesting. And, of course, the jokes ran like nuts over the weekend. They ran like crazy. Well, it's going to be a shame when he commits suicide. You know, all of the suicide jokes were running heavy over the weekend, which I thought, well, those are the easy jokes. Show me some harder jokes, because seriously? I mean, honestly, I'll just be gut level honest with you. This is not a laughing matter. And the reason it's not a laughing matter is because you have Michael Bloomberg, who most people are really not familiar with. Why? Because he was in politics in New York. He was the mayor of New York City for a couple of terms. He was known because of that. But people don't know much about him except what I just said. And when you mention the term stop and frisk, they go, wait a minute, wasn't that in New York? Who was that guy? It was him, Michael Bloomberg. And now that's coming back to haunt him, and people are not happy because that's coming up. Well, that's coming up because the socialists on the Democrat side are doing everything they can to dig up as much dirt on Bloomberg as possible. So they have their minions out there flooding social media with all of this negativity about Michael Bloomberg. We're finding out he was a misogynist. And we're finding out that the women who worked for him hated him because he was such a creep. We're finding out all of this stuff about Michael Bloomberg now that, oddly enough, wasn't around before. Does this sound familiar? It's like Donald Trump. All of these people coming up out of the woodwork, making these accusations and saying that he has done things and said things. And interestingly enough, in Bloomberg's case, these things seem to be provable. In Trump's case, not so much. But in Bloomberg's case, these things seem to have some substance, like the stop and frisk thing. The stop and frisk thing in New York was stupid. It was just stupid. I mean, I saw somebody, a friend of mine on social media over the weekend who was a liberal. And we, as I told someone recently, my liberal friends and I tend not to get into politics online because our friendships matter too much to us. I don't want to spoil friendships and the good times, the laughs we can have, and enjoying each other's company by getting angry over something like politics, because their friendship is more important to me than that. Although I do stand firm on my political opinions, and I won't budge because I've actually done due diligence and I know what I base my opinions on. Their friendship is that important to me, so we just don't talk about that stuff. But this guy, he's talking about, he said that, well, stop and frisk was unconstitutional. And generally speaking, when you see a liberal throw that term unconstitutional out there, it means they just didn't like it. And they, as far as they could tell, it was just wrong on basic principle, general principle, it was just wrong. Well, yeah, stop and frisk may have been unconstitutional, but the larger issue is that stop and frisk was evidence that Michael Bloomberg doesn't see everyone as created equal. That Michael Bloomberg doesn't understand the basic concept of human dignity, and that he saw nothing wrong with stopping people and shaking them down to make sure they weren't breaking the law. When that goes against everything that we hold dear as far as due process and the actual execution of law in America, he chose to pick certain people and frisk them to see if they were illegally carrying weapons or anything like that, or they had any kind of drugs on them or something like that. And that was just, that's not right. You can't do that. That goes against the grain of the way the law works in our nation. Well, it also goes against basic human dignity because he looks down on a certain class of people. That's just how he is. We see this with his comments about farmers, which have come up. I could teach anybody to farm. Dig a hole, put seeds in it, put the soil back over it, water it, you got corn. In other words, farmers couldn't cope with the IT or AI industries because what they do is brain dead stuff. It doesn't take any intelligence to do that. That's essentially what he's saying. What he doesn't realize, because he's an out of touch elitist, is that farmers depend on technology and they depend on the internet, and they depend on many things in order to succeed in being farmers who can pay their bills and feed their families. He doesn't understand that because he doesn't understand real people. He doesn't see people that way. He's a lot like Hillary Rodham Clinton. Back to the running mate thing. Oddly enough, he picked someone who said this.
Grossly generalistic. You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Yeah, and right? The people laughed. You're right? Yeah, see? She looks at America in such a way that it reveals everything about who she actually is and what she actually is. She is just another pea in the pod with Michael Bloomberg. She is a progressive elitist. They both are. And they look at America and they see progressive people who have their heads on straight, are intelligent, and are worthy of their attention. And then there's this little corner of America which consists of who? The deplorables. the basket of deplorables. So at the very least, Hillary Clinton sees a quarter of America that way. And when you watch her video, I challenge you, go look it up. Just go to YouTube and put in Hillary Clinton basket of deplorables, which is what I did. And one of the videos which comes up is 42 seconds long. I just played you a tiny bit of it. It's a CNN video. And look at the expression on her face when she's talking about those particular people. The disdain. The disgust. Those people. The unwashed masses. She and Michael Bloomberg see America the same way. We said no to Hillary Clinton. We will say no to Michael Bloomberg. Not just because his competition's trying to bury him right now, but because we know exactly what that man is.
Googly moogly.
Yeah, I agree. Great googly moogly. You ever have those Mondays where you just kind of look at the day and you wish you could just set the calendar back? Because I'm having one of those days. I'm just going to be full disclosure, honest with you. It's just, I will trade this day for tomorrow because, I think what it is, there's something in the air that's got my allergies going for me. And when that happens, I care about two things, and it's really weird. Over the years, I've come to recognize this for what it is. Two things matter to me. One, sleep. I want to sleep all the time. And two, I'm always hungry. And it's just something about this particular thing. For some reason, I want to be eating something, and if I could eat while I'm sleeping, it would be a perfect world. But there we have it. So did you see, and if you didn't see it, I don't know how you avoided it, did you see that the president used the beast, the presidential limo, during his visit to the Daytona International Speedway yesterday, took a lap in the beast? It was colossal. It was incredible. It was fantastic. Actually, the visuals, just the visuals from yesterday are something that you should go hunt for, go to news sites and YouTube, and just save them to your hard drive if you can, because they're things that you're going to look back on and go, God, hey, remember that day? Oh yeah, I got it in my phone. Look, the day that Air Force One buzzed the Daytona Super Speedway in Florida, and that the presidential limo took a lap. The visuals, the images are just amazing. Seeing that plane, and I remember looking at the imagery. The first imagery I saw, you could see the plane dipping low over the speedway as it passed to go land, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. And then I started thinking, wait a minute, how did they get that shot? That shot was from above the plane. And then it hit me when I saw another angle from like somebody in a parking lot or something. Whoa, look at that. You could see the blimp, the Goodyear blimp in the background. The plane, the presidential plane, Air Force One, actually was flying lower than the Goodyear blimp as it flew over the Daytona Speedway. It was just an incredible sight to behold. And there's some still shots that are floating around the internet today with the stands and people standing up in the stands holding their phones up watching as the plane flew by. And it looks like the plane is lower than the level of the stands, which it wouldn't have been because it flew in at 800 feet. But wow, just absolutely wow, an amazing thing. And then the imagery of the limo, the presidential limo, this huge beefed up bulletproof Cadillac circling the track. It just absolutely amazing. And then him making a speech beforehand and issuing that iconic phrase, gentlemen, start your engines. And just what an amazing day it was for the president. And of course, the liberals are just, they've got their knickers in a twist. They got their panties in a wad. They're just having a horrible time with it. Maggie Haberman over at the New York Times tweeted, using the official apparatus of government for what appears to be a political event. She apparently missed when George Bush actually, he didn't fly low and do the lap, but he did show up and make an appearance. And she's apparently ignored all the times that Barack Obama used the presidency to his political advantage. I mean, you know, it didn't matter then. Apparently it does now, though. Well, she had that to say, and there were people, there were people who had things to say back to her. Mark Hemingway said, I'm sorry, but this is just an absurd characterization of what's actually happening here, and describing it this way betrays a real bias. Another person said, to be blunt, get a life, Maggie. Obama went to a March Madness game, and that was fine. Relax. I know the Daytona 500 is the opposite of what the Times represents readership-wise, but chill. Another critic said, Maggie, your unique insights are invaluable. Keep up the solid journalisming. Somebody else said, hey, would you want him to ride in an Uber? Another said, wait till you learn that the president rides in that thing to literal campaign events. Somebody else said, so what do you call it when you use journalism as a politics apparatus for the Democrat Party? Ooh, and that is what cuts to the point. That people like Maggie Haberman at the New York Times use journalism, which is supposed to be independent and isolated, an observer of things as they happen. One who journals and catalogs the events rather than does what it does today by influencing opinion, by misreporting the news. So there were people who were unhappy. Bless their hearts. No sense in wasting time on them. Why? They're always unhappy, and they'll always be here. Something else that popped up over the weekend is an old story that happened, that came over from CNBC. This was December of last year, so it's not such an old story, but still, it's not fresh. And it's back to Michael Bloomberg again. Presidential candidate Mike Bloomberg is pouring tens of millions of dollars from his vast personal fortune into his campaign. A piece of that is going to an unknown digital business called Hawkfish. I don't know if you've heard about this or not. This was news to me, and I tend to watch this kind of stuff. Hawkfish, which Bloomberg himself founded during the spring of last year, Hawkfish will be the primary digital agency and technology services provider for the campaign, says Julie Wood, a Bloomberg campaign spokeswoman. She added that the firm is now providing digital ad services, including content creation, ad placement, and analytics for their campaign. It'll also help Democratic races across the country in future election cycles, she said. The company's existence has not been previously reported. Bloomberg's campaign disclosed details about the company after CNBC pressed the campaign about its recent hiring spree. Bloomberg, a billionaire former three-term mayor of New York, started building the company early in 2019 before he decided to seek the Democratic presidential nomination. That's what a campaign aide says. While the campaign declined to say how much Bloomberg has invested in this company, he has said he will spend over $100 million on anti-Trump digital ads. His campaign has already spent at least $13 million on Facebook and Google spots alone, and this was in December of last year. Bloomberg, who was dedicated to denying President Donald Trump a second term before he entered the Democratic race, built Hawkfish with the intention of overpowering the formidable data operation assembled by the Republican National Committee and Trump's Cash Flush campaign. Hawkfish appears to have been assembled in secret. It has no public website. A search of elections databases turned up no financial records connected to work for other Democratic causes. No other candidate in the 2020 race is known to have created a vendor designed to aid their bid. While it's unusual for a presidential candidate to turn to a company he founded for assistance, ethics experts say Bloomberg's move does not break Federal Election Commission laws. Paul Ryan, vice president of policy and litigation at Common Cause, said, "I would say nothing shows a red flag as far as a violation. If he sincerely had not made up his mind to run when he made this company to help Democrats, it's fine. Going forward, the campaign would have to pay fair market value to the company in goods that he's receiving. Let's stop there for just a sec. I would say nothing shows a red flag as far as a violation if he sincerely had not made up his mind to run when he made this company to help Democrats. It's fine. So this guy expects us to believe that in a space of a few months, between the early part of 2019 and the latter part of 2019, Bloomberg had not made a decision to run for president. He has been saying for quite some time that he was going to work hard to defeat Donald Trump. I would say that most likely he knew he would have to enter the race at some point. And that he would have to stand in front of cameras and make speeches, and that he would have to found a campaign in order to funnel money into it, in order to run ads, in order to defeat Donald Trump. Because there were certain limitations otherwise, campaign contribution limits and the like. So I would say that he knew very well upon the founding of this company, Hawkfish, that he was going to run. I would say that's fairly obvious, wouldn't you?
Oh, snap.
Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here with you for the duration. My intent was not to spend this entire podcast talking about Michael Bloomberg, but that article, that December article from CNBC just kind of popped up, and I thought, wow, that's just crazy stuff. And one of the reasons I wanted to share it is because of how he does business. First off, the fact that he founded Hawkfish early last year and then announced his candidacy later last year, and people on the left, like this reporter for CNBC, refuses to make the connection and understand that possibly there is a conflict here, and giving him the benefit of the doubt. Now, had this been Donald Trump, there would have been all kinds of digging to find out some nefarious reason for founding the company. But that didn't happen in Bloomberg's case. Now, since this article was published, now, since he's declared, he's throwing a lot of money at the race. His ads are everywhere. And the socialists who are running for the presidential, for the candidates, for the slot for the Democrats, are up in arms. They're having a hissy fit about it. So they've got their minions flinging as much dirt as possible against Bloomberg. They're fighting him now. Now we're looking at this. Before, not so much. And they're, I wanted to, I'm trying to find, I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. I'm scanning through the article trying to find what I was wanted to get to. And I'm not seeing it because I just can't focus that clearly on it. The reason is, the thing is that they went to the address on the, for the, here it is, using, let's see, it's not entirely clear where the company is based. Using research company Accurant, CNBC reporters went to a New York address that was associated with Hawkfish. At the address, 909 3rd Avenue, an attendant at the front desk said no business named Hawkfish existed there. The Bloomberg campaign spokeswoman said the address, which is about a five-minute walk from Bloomberg's namesake company, was only used for receiving paperwork. The address is the same as Mike Bloomberg's longtime accountant, Geller & Company. So he has a fake address for this company. He's founded a company which is designed, its entire design is to help the Democrat Party defeat Donald Trump. That's the whole thing about this. And it's all done in the hush, in the shadows. It's all done behind closed doors, out of sight. And the entire purpose is to benefit the Democrat Party. The entire purpose is to defeat Donald Trump. And it's all, as much as they would like to say, well, I don't see any problem with that, there's definitely something shady about this. There's something very shady about this. But the progressive press is never going to see anything shady about it. And that's something we need to acknowledge. They're just not going to see anything shady. On the other hand, they will look for things to find that are shady whenever Donald Trump tweets. Whenever Donald Trump does anything or says anything, they are looking for something in it to accuse him of. And yeah, I know they're picking it at Bloomberg now because he's a threat to the socialist movement that's running on the Democrat ticket. But they've been going full time on Donald Trump for all this, for the entire time he's been president. Ever since the day he was elected, they've been looking for ways to eliminate him. They've been looking for ways to take him out. And that's using their words. The DOJ has opened a new investigation into James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, and former top DOJ officials. There's been a lot of chatter about a certain person, Andrew McCabe, not being charged. And there have been a lot of conservatives up in arms. Well, why didn't he charge McCabe? He lied. These people who lied. I mean, look at Stone. Roger Stone gets all this. He gets, you know, they tried to sentence him to 7 to 9 years. More than a rapist would get. More than many heinous criminals would get. And they tried to sentence him to 7 to 9 years for process crimes. But they're going to let McCabe walk? Apparently, there's a reason. When I saw all of that blowback happening, conservatives running commentary and tweeting and posting on Facebook and all up in arms about McCabe being allowed to walk free, I thought, whenever Trump does something like this, another shoe is going to drop. This is the other shoe. Andrew Weissman, a former top lawyer at the Justice Department who played a central role in Robert Mueller's investigation, said Friday the Justice Department has begun a new investigation into several former top FBI officials. Weissman, speaking to MSNBC host Chuck Todd, said the Justice Department has swapped its loser case against Andrew McCabe, in which the DOJ declined to pursue charges against McCabe for lying to investigators, for a new case against former FBI Director James Comey, McCabe, and Peter Strzok. Weissman said, all they did was swapped out a loser case for starting an investigation that's going to be of Comey, McCabe, Pete Strzok. The investigation is related to the DOJ's review of the Michael Flynn case, he explained. Last week, Attorney General William Barr appointed Jeffrey Jensen, the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Missouri, to investigate the circumstances of the Flynn case, including his interview with FBI investigators. NBC News reported that Jensen is broadly reviewing the case, suggesting latitude in the scope of his inquiry. So, what's happened is that McCabe was allowed to walk because another investigation was about to kick in that will probably take him down. They had a weak case. They had a case that couldn't hold up, probably because it would of course be appealed. And on appeal, the Trump administration would take a hit. They would lose. And of course, the progressives in media and in government would all have a heyday with that. And so what did they do? They decided, go ahead. It's a weak case anyway. Let him walk. We have another way to fry this fish. So keep your eyes on that. Things are happening. When you see people saying, you see, he's just not being, he's letting this happen and that happen, and he's not going after these people. He said he's going to drain the swamp. And look, when you see all these negative Nancys posting on social media, remember, nothing happens without a reason in this administration. There is a reason. And he never lets his hand show. Just keep that in mind. Something else that the elites in the press and political parties are having a fit about is that President Trump is deploying a group of elite tactical agents to sanctuary cities across the U.S. to increase the number of arrests for criminal illegal aliens. But you're not seeing those words, criminal illegal aliens. Those words are being left out. Just immigrants. The arrests of immigrants. That's what the left is saying. According to sources who spoke to the New York Times, Trump is sending about 100 agents of the elite U.S. Border Patrol tactical unit known as BORTAC to sanctuary cities such as Detroit, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, New York City, New York, Newark, New Jersey, San Francisco, California, New Orleans, Louisiana, Los Angeles, California, Atlanta, Georgia, Houston, Texas, and Boston, Massachusetts. The BORTAC agents are expected to help the Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents with deportation operations between February and May in an effort to increase arrests of criminal illegal aliens by 35%. Now, this, it says, according to emails read to the Times. That's interesting. Acting ICE Director Matthew Albence told the Times in a statement, quote, "As we have noted for years, in jurisdictions where we are not allowed to assume custody of aliens from jails, our officers are forced to make at-large arrests of criminal aliens who have been released into communities. When sanctuary cities release these criminals back to the street, it increases the occurrence of preventable crimes, and more importantly, preventable victims." The added BORTAC agents aiding ICE with arrests of criminal illegal aliens comes as federal immigration officials reportedly requested more help in the sanctuary cities that shield fugitives from deportation. Most recently, the Trump administration has released a full-fledged federal campaign to take on sanctuary jurisdictions. At the Justice Department, Attorney General William Barr has filed lawsuits against the sanctuary state of New Jersey and the sanctuary state of King County, Washington, for their obstruction of national immigration law. Barr said last week, "When we are talking about sanctuary cities, we are talking about policies that are designed to allow criminal aliens to escape. Their express purpose is to shelter aliens whom law enforcement has already arrested for other crimes." And those are the people these elite BORTAC agents are going after. What the progressive press and your progressive liberal friends on social media are not saying is that these are criminals. Not just people who have crossed the border illegally, but people who have crossed the border and committed crimes in America, who have been arrested for those crimes, and then released back into society. And that's the issue. We've been watching this happen for quite a while now. People are angry about it. People in these communities, in these sanctuary states and sanctuary cities, are livid. They're angry about the fact that criminals are being re-released onto the streets and they're committing more and more crimes. They're also angry about the fact that these criminals are being shielded from federal agencies which want to take them out of their communities and make their communities safer. People who want to live in a safe community are not happy with this sanctuary status. They want things changed. They want these criminals taken off the streets and deported. They want them gone. But their government, who is much wiser and knows better than them, is ignoring the will of the people. And that's why ICE is stepping in.
So crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
Yeah, we are. Monday, February 17th, it's President's Day. diving into the final segment of this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hope you've got a good day ahead of you, that you've got some wonderful things planned. I've been trying to decide what to do for lunch today myself, because when I have to leave here today to go produce elsewhere, got to do some Dawson Now podcast work today, and I've also got to shoot some video, and I trying to decide what to do about lunch. Should I just make it simple and make a PBJ before I leave the studio, or should I swing by someplace on the way? Because I found it. I told you about finding this little Mexican place. Oh, I may have to go try something else at the little Mexican place because it's cheap and it's right on the way. I think that's probably what's going to happen today. Oh, my. Well, this could have gone in the absurd file at the top of the podcast, but it's kind of all over the place, as absurd as it is. And it just kind of defies the definition of that first weird, absurd thing to talk about. You've no doubt by now seen and heard that Michael Avenatti has some serious legal trouble on his hands. He was found guilty on 3 counts trying to extort Nike for up to $25 million. And everybody who was watching him and listening to him while he was the darling of the leftist media was shaking their heads and going, wow, there's something really slimy about this guy. There's something really bad going on with this guy that I can't put a finger on it, but my gut tells me this guy is slime. Well, your gut was right. But there were people all over, I mean, all over, who just could not see it. All over the media, in the news, everywhere. They were everywhere, and they just couldn't see it. Well, listen to this.
He's Donald Trump's worst nightmare, Michael Avenatti.
Joining us once again is Michael Avenatti.
Let's bring in Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti. Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti, thank you very much.
He's out there saving the country.
Don Meacham says he may be the savior of the republic.
You are something of a folk hero now.
I owe Michael Avenatti an apology. I've been saying enough already, Michael. I've seen you everywhere. What do you have left to say? I was wrong, brother. You have a lot to say.
I am just dying to hear what you think.
These people all like you.
I'm the only person right here Donald Trump fears more than Robert Miller.
We think you guys are the tip of the spear that's going to take down Donald Trump.
Michael Avenatti's a beast.
Okay, that's true.
And
he's a beast.
He's a beast.
I hand it to her, and I hand it to Michael Avenatti.
But he has a bigger calling here, that being a lawyer is minimal compared to what he's doing.
No one has talked tougher directly to Donald Trump on TV than Michael Avenatti, and Donald Trump is afraid to mention his name.
That's fascinating.
Donald Trump is terrified of Michael Avenatti.
Yeah, right. Trump will run for his money more than anybody else, Michael Avenatti.
An existential threat to the Trump presidency.
The Democrats could learn something for you. You are messing with Trump a lot more than they are.
He has no doubt created sheer panic in Donald Trump's very fragile mind.
Michael Avenatti is laying down the law as guest co-host. And is he really thinking about running for president?
One reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
You look at the field of Democrats right now, and Avenatti's the one who stands out.
If they decide they value a fighter most,
yes,
people would be foolish to underestimate Michael Avenatti.
I have always said that they need a fighter. Look, I mean, we're going to continue to use the media. I think we've used it with great success.
Yeah, he definitely did use the media to great success. He parlayed his name from unknown into being the darling and the most prized guest on talk shows and on news programs. And he was just a basic slime ball lawyer. Not to insult all lawyers, but this guy was just a slime ball lawyer. He was stealing from his clients. He was bad news. Just about back to the montage. Does it bother you? Like it bugged me. That Joy Behar kept saying Miller instead of Mueller. It is, anyway, CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin said he felt snookered by Michael Avenatti. Remember, he got his start. He rose to fame as the attorney for adult film star, porn star, Stormy Daniels. in her legal battle against President Donald Trump. Tubin said, I remember once at the peak of all this, we, meaning Avenatti and himself, went to lunch in Midtown. That he was talking to Anderson Cooper about the attorney's popularity at the time. He says, we walked back together toward CNN and it was like walking with a major celebrity. People came up to him. Go for it. Go get Trump. He had this hashtag, hashtag basta. People remembered that. On Friday, Avenatti was found guilty on 3 counts for trying to extort athletic clothing and shoe company Nike for up to $25 million. In May of 2019, the attorney was charged with wire fraud and identity theft involving his former client Daniels, while she negotiated her 2018 book deal. Daniels earlier alleged that she had an affair with Trump before he became president. Avenatti, who frequently made the cable news rounds at the time, was an outspoken critic of the president. Tubin said, frankly, you know, I feel kind of snookered because I took him seriously. The legal analyst said that there was a pathology to Avenatti's actions. He said, it's all involving stealing money. It's all involving taking money that was destined for clients, that was destined for law partners. I think it's clear. At this point, he afforded it by taking what he wasn't entitled to. He also referenced Avenatti's possible presidential run in the 2020 election, saying at the peak of this, he even announced that he was considering running for president. He went to Iowa. He went to New Hampshire. To call it hubris doesn't do it justice, the craziness of this. He also said that Avenatti's conviction in the Nike trial was much worse than his charges for embezzling money from Daniels. He says the California case is much worse because, first of all, it's millions of dollars. And also, he was the lawyer in cases where there were awards to his clients, and again, he pocketed the money. People in need, people who had problems. That's why they got this award in the first place. Also, stealing money from his law partners, again, millions of dollars, an issue. All these sentences are based on the amount of loss, so these are big numbers. Meanwhile, Stormy Daniels wrote an Instagram post in response to news of Avenatti's conviction. That post says, sadly, it appears that Michael Avenatti did to me, what Michael Avenatti did to me was just the tip of an iceberg of deceit. I'm not surprised his dishonesty has been revealed on a grand scale. His arrogant, fraudulent, and overly aggressive behavior became so pervasive that the jury found his true character. Although clearly a just result, I do feel sad for his children and foolish for believing his lies for so long. Michael Avenatti is in deep, deep trouble. Rightfully so. Those of us who got the vibe from Avenatti early on aren't surprised. His deceit, his criminal activity, finally caught up with him. We knew, back when he was walking people out to testify against Trump in this particular case with Stormy Daniels, that there was something flaky about him. And then when he involved himself in the Brett Kavanaugh situation, where he, for the sake of being in the spotlight again, paraded out people who were making up stories, who were lying about someone who was put forward as a potential new addition to the Supreme Court. This guy had no boundaries when it came to deceit. This guy can't be trusted. For anything, in anything. And now he's proven it. And a court of law has pronounced sentence on the guy. Well, no, you know what's funny is that this, because he's a lawyer, and because he is who and what he is, I can't help but think that there will be challenges, appeals. This isn't over. But in this particular case, A court of law looked at the situation and said, whoa, nope, guilty on all these charges. Is this actually digging the hole and burying Michael Avenatti? Finally? I don't think so. I really don't think so. This guy, who is so self-deluded, self-deceived, that he actually held a press conference when there was nobody there but a cameraman, and actually stood up and talked to the camera. This guy who trotted out liars to take down a Supreme Court nominee. This guy who represented a porn star and then pocketed the money. This guy who has stolen money from his clients and from his law firm. This scumbag will find a way to get back in the news again, because it's obvious that this is what he thrives on. He thrives on that attention. And the fact that all of those people on those talk shows and news shows in that compilation that ran for almost 2 minutes, a minute and 45 seconds of people praising this guy, excited to see him come on their set. These people, all of these people were so excited about Michael Avenatti and practically worshipped him and kissed his feet. Why? Because they saw him as the only person who could potentially take out your president. Their reason for loving this guy was his potential for taking out the president you elected. That says everything. Especially when you look at the cable news and you see that they loved him more than anybody else did. It says volumes. And I gotta say goodbye. Hey, have a good Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning for the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.